WATD presents Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
If it's Monday night, it's got to be Monday Night Talk with Kevin Tachi. So thanks for having me on.
Kevin, good for you to hold back and let him tell his story.
Putting the South Shore spin on politics, current events, and pop culture.
You guys are the center of the universe today, at least the political universe.
I believe both of you are from the area. Marshfield guys, yes, no?
Correct, yeah.
That's right.
There's only one person not from Marshfield in this room right now. And it's you.
It's me. I'm the outcast.
Well, you've always been generous with the time. I appreciate it very much.
Well, I'm honored to be on your show tonight, Kevin, with that impressive lineup you have.
I believe our guest that we've been waiting for, Congressman Stephen Lynch.
Kevin, good to join you.
The governor of the Commonwealth, Charlie Baker. You ready?
I got to tell you that it was really nice to hear Aerosmith on the intro there.
You're going to be the rock and roll governor?
I don't know about that, but...
We have Mayor Joe Sullivan joining us, sir. How are you?
Well, Kevin, very good to be with you again.
Dr. Drew Pinsky. Dr. Drew, are you there?
I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Mr. Ming Tsai, welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, thanks, Kevin.
Massachusetts State Auditor Suzanne Bump. Hello, Auditor. How are you?
I am fine, and I'm delighted to be with you this evening.
And now, your host, Kevin Tachi.
Welcome to Monday Night Talk. It is your President's Day edition of Monday Night Talk. And we're proud to say that we're live, although in a couple of weeks we might not be. I think we're contemplating a best of because Tachi goes on vacation. I have to keep my voice down. Oh, I know. Hold on, Larry. How's that? Is that better?
No. That was. There could be some basketball coming up.
When?
I don't know. I guess sent you an email about it.
When?
Last week.
Okay. Well, we'll discuss that off air.
I'm just letting you know.
All right. Anyways.
MIAA playoff games coming up.
Oh, boy. Joy. Anyways, so we got a great show lined up for you. We're going to start things off after traffic. We'll speak with the state representative, Jim Cantwell. And as we do, we try to do like a little bit of a state house report. We check in with the local elected officials, give them an opportunity to talk and chat about things that they're working on, whether it's in district, whether it's up on Beacon Hill, so to speak. And 6:40, we're going to speak with a gentleman. His name is Jimmy Pereira. And Jimmy is, I think he's one of the first people out of the gate running for mayor in the city of Brockton. So we have Jimmy in, and we'll chat with him for a bit. And then at 7 o'clock, we're going to kind of do something we did similar a couple of weeks ago when we had the folks in from Weymouth. If you remember, we had town council president Patrick O'Connor. Of course, Patrick is also a state senator. So he kind of did double duty. And we had Becky High, and we had, well, by phone, we had Mayor Bob Hedlund. So we did like a two-hour thing. Well, no, it wasn't a two-hour thing. It was a two-segment thing. I mean, for an hour. So we're going to kind of do that today with some folks who are, they're in their first term. Kind of on the back nine of their first term, so to speak. They're in the second year, the two-year term in the city of Brockton. So we have at-large councilor Wynn Farwell, Ward 5 city councilor Ann Beauregard, and remotely, via phone, Ward 6 councilor Jack Lally. And we'll talk with them about, hey, what's it been like? First year in, what is the experience has been? And let's not forget down the road, right around the corner, that's right, city elections. So we're looking forward to that conversation. And joining me, he is my my wingman for the evening, and he is the unofficial co-host for the evening. Did I say that right?
I appreciate the unofficial. It's less commitment.
You can choose to speak or not. We have Mark Rocheteau, who also is, we're going to let him kind of chime in a couple of times this evening about upcoming production by the Massasoit Theater Company. Of course, theater with T-R-E, not E-R. Raisin in the Sun.
Lorraine Hainsbury's Pulitzer Prize-winning play.
Of course. I would expect nothing less. And directed by...
Professor Corinne Mason.
Okay.
For one weekend only, opening on Thursday, March 9th, and running through Saturday, March 11th, with a 3 p.m. matinee and an 8 p.m. show. Both shows on Saturday will feature a talkback with the cast.
Really?
Yes.
You'll be passing around a microphone in the studio in the
it'll be talk show format. Sure. Yep, talking about issues that Raising the Sun brings up in regards to, you know, historical issues and current issues.
Who will be passing that microphone? Will that be you?
Possibly so.
I can remember. I remember because one time I had access to the Massasoit Video Library.
Uh-oh, don't do it.
And there was a video of you, and you actually were doing a talk show format.
I was. Unfortunately, this is radio.
Right.
We can't see that hairstyle.
No, we can't. We can't say it. But you looked very reminiscent of a pop star of that we're both fond of.
Back in the day.
Yeah, not today. Not so much today.
Put on a few pounds.
Both of us. Except for Jim. State Rep Jim Cantwell looking very slim.
We've been running today.
Did you really?
No, running around.
All right, good to know. Of course, Jim here early because Jim's going to be doing the segment. I got to tell you, there was like a phone conversation moments before we went live, and the representative was just kind of pre-warning that he was inbound. Kev, I'm not sure if I'm going to be on the phone or in studio, but I'm going to be there.
In case you didn't already know, that WEED is now legal in the Commonwealth, which means using the WEED is no longer considered illicit. So Brennan's Smoke Shop can sell pipes and vapes legally for the WEED, okay? Brennan's Smoke Shop, the champions of tobacco in Massachusetts. Customers must have a valid state or federal ID to enter the store. Like us on Facebook.
Part of the show. Call in and join in on the conversation. 781-837-4900. Now, back to Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
And we are back here on Monday Night Talk. Thank you for keeping the radio dial set here to 95.9 WATD as we're here to have a conversation. Good conversation with a lot of local folks this evening. That's the idea of Monday Night Talk. Kind of a magazine show. It's sure. Kind of like the Chronicle for radio.
For the South Shore.
For the South Shore.
So you're Peter Mohegan, Kevin Tachi.
All sure. Together, all in one. And you'd be J.C. Monahan. That's State Representative Jim Cantwell, who is being a great... I actually saw him on Friday. We had a chance to have a great conversation.
That was fantastic.
In my other role in media, I do a little bit of TV production.
Right.
Jim was a phone call away. He's a representative. I have somebody who wants to talk with you about the Lyme disease legislation right. That was kind of enacted, put into place last session. Mark's looking at me kind of like,
Lyme disease?
Lyme disease? What
legislation?
Is that? Oh, wait. I know. You get the palatial Rocheteau mansion down there in Plymouth. You don't deal with deer tick or ticks?
Oh, I have actually had to deal with one of the other tick diseases before. I was afflicted once, and I'm quite familiar. I'm just interested in the Lyme disease legislation.
Right.
If you could briefly just to kind of give sure. Fill him in.
Sure. So one of the difficulties that you probably experienced is we've got a threefold issue. One is that the Center for Disease Control says that approximately 300,000 people a year get afflicted with some type of tick-borne disease. However, they think as many as 10 times as that may be afflicted without realizing what caused it.
Right.
So three-prong issue. One is trying to have funds that we'll be able to let people know what they can do individually to try to prevent themselves from being afflicted, being bitten, because we want everyone to enjoy the great outdoors.
Sure.
The second part is to make sure that doctors can accurately be able to identify what's taking place, mm-hmm. because there are a lot of misdiagnoses,
right.
and it can lead to some really serious injuries for people long term. And the third is legislation that we just passed, which is saying once a doctor does make the diagnosis, up until this point last year, insurance companies were denying people from having long-term antibiotic treatment. Mm-hmm. And what we wanted to do was to empower not the insurance company, but the doctor to say, if you're diagnosing this, we want you to have the tools that are available to help cure these folks for whatever period is required.
Sure.
Because it is debilitating, if that's right. So that was a part of it. What's the exciting announcement last week is for Mass Biologics. We've been working to try to to come up. There are two things that people in the future, we hope, that one is a vaccine that did exist before that was taken off the shelves because not enough people wanted it. But the other is an antibody that we're trying to create right here in Massachusetts at UMass, at medical studies out in Worcester, and would be fantastic. Right now, they've already been identifying it in a small amount, so we're trying to make sure we'll fund that so that we'll be able to help people. They could get a quick shot, and then they'd be immune for 6 months, come get a second shot thereafter. So it's an exciting potential, good way for us to be investing funds with public health to help many, many people. And I appreciated Kevin bringing me on his show, to be on.
It was a show called Health Exchange with Kimberly King.
Mm-hmm.
Who's doing the show. But Jim's actually here to talk a little bit. I think, if anything, you're here to promote something that's going to happen
tomorrow.
Tomorrow, the Promote Prevention Commission's kickoff, swearing in. I guess there's going to be introductions. There'll be a little bit of a charge. And
that's exactly right.
What the future is.
Yeah, absolutely so.
This is taking place up at the State House, Members Lounge, third floor next to room 348. I have attached here.
Very specific.
Oh, no. Oh, anybody who might. What is the Promote Prevention Commission? If you could give us the details of that.
Absolutely. The first thing, Kevin, WATD has been the leader throughout the South Shore to make sure that people were aware that we're looking at different forms of behavioral health concerns, and one case being substance abuse. It is no longer something where it's a criminal offense. Certainly there are people who sell drugs who definitely should be put away for a very long time. Mm. But for people who have become addicted because sometimes pain medication or other issues, we're very much seeing this as a public health crisis. And Kevin, I just brought him with me just from this weekend. We have Boston Globe front page story on Saturday, opioid toll, nearly 2,000 people died last year of opioid overdoses. And the Patriot Ledger had their weekend edition, drugs killed two daughters from one family. It's clearly something that we've been doing a great deal to help people after they've been addicted. And the reason for the charge of this commission, 95% of the money that we spend in state government to deal with opiate abuse or drug abuse and those matters are what we say are downstream. It's after someone has already become addicted. So it could be the jails that we're spending money on, police that we're spending money on, long-term treatment and recovery, all important things. But what we aim to do is to try to move upstream, to try to find what are evidence-based solutions that could work for young people before they're going to have a first use of any illicit drug, saving phenomenal amounts of money, but most importantly, being able to make sure people have productive lives. And across the board, by the way, we use that as the example, but there are, because that's more the criminal justice field, certainly for medical field, but we're also looking for behavioral health, could be for disorders. At any given time in America, one in four Americans could be diagnosed with what would be a behavioral health concern. Could be anxiety, could be depression, could be an eating disorder and the like. It's trying to make sure people get to have assistance early in life so that they're not going to have long-term difficulties. So that's the purpose of the commission.
So now, what's your role? Are you...
I am the co-chairman.
Okay, I just want to make sure. I didn't want to give you bestow a title onto you. If that is not your title.
No, that's all
so
right.
So it says here co-chair, but it says house co-chair.
That's right.
Of this. And you'll be doing introductions. I got a nice breakdown as to...
Oh, and if you have people who are listening in or from your podcast, you know, folks can go just on promoteprevent.com and they can read about the commission, the chart of the people who are on there. This is an all-star group of folks. We have Cheryl Bartlett, who helped write the legislation with me, and Ben Thomas from my office, who was the former Commissioner of Public Health. We are hoping, knock on wood, we've been speaking to the Surgeon General for the United States, who has written a chapter relating to this, who hopefully will be coming to one of our future commission meetings. You'll see Mary Lou Sutters, who is the Secretary for Health and Human Services, who is to be coming, the Chief Justice for all the trial courts, who's going to be coming, Judge Carey, the Secretary of Public Safety, who's going to come, having his part, Dan Bennett. It's a really impressive group of folks, and we intend to, tomorrow's going to be a lot of the pomp and circumstance, but very excited for the work to be done.
State Rep, just looking in regards to the Promote Prevent the red flags that go off when you're looking at behavioral health disorders. What is some of the things, how does that work upstream to keep someone from going onto the downstream side of becoming an opioid addict?
Perfect question. You know, so some of the things that we've done, we've touched upon it with some legislation when we said, look, for doctors who are out there, not necessarily anyone's fault, but it used to be up until very recently, you'd go in for docs and they'd have all those little smiley faces of the like when you're being treated and say, well, on a scale of 1 to 10, how serious is your pain? You could have a routine surgery on a knee or the like and they give you 90 OxyContin and you say, off your way. One of the things that we've done is now, by law, doctors can prescribe up to 7 pills at a given time, unless there's some extraordinary circumstance, because there are people, by the way, who do have very serious pain issues. So that's an example. But there are programs, multiple programs, that help for kids, could start as young as second and fourth grade, showing them how to take care of their body. So you wouldn't be talking drugs to kids that young. What you would talk about is how to exercise, how eating certain foods make you healthier, how doing what Kevin Tachi does here, drinking a whole, looks like almost a gallon of Poland Springs water, how that's going to make sure he's healthy.
I drink a lot of water. Love water.
You're supposed to.
It's that guy's fault right over there.
But then there are programs. We have in the inner cities, we have programs called Shannon Grants to keep kids busy. So trying to extend the day for school.
Sure.
Let's get them in to do any kind of sports programs. Sure. You know, like Michael Brady, big proponent in Brockton of that. So it's identifying.
By the way, just aside, this is kind of an inside joke, folks. Yeah. He got your note.
Okay.
And he didn't understand it first. They go, he was here a couple hours prior, because Senator Brady,
yes.
Mike Brady, he showed up at the same studio a couple hours after you.
And
he chuckled after when he got it, but it was funny. And it was funny that you mentioned him, so to speak, during this conversation. I see you have a gentleman who wears many hats. I know that just up until a couple of days ago, he was actually wearing a reporter hat. Michael Maresco, Assistant Secretary of the Commonwealth.
Yes.
Is he going to be doing the swearing in?
Michael is. So Michael, who is the Assistant Secretary for the Commonwealth, a former Marshall Selectman, he's going to swear everybody in.
And he's going to file a report for us too, right? Take pictures.
He can be reporting.
He wears so many hats. He does it so well.
He actually saved a person just a few days ago.
That's what I'm talking about. Glad we're on the same page.
Yes.
And he took good pictures too.
Oh, good.
That's why I was kind of joking tongue in cheek.
Right.
Anybody goes to the WATD website, they'll see pictures. I believe that Mike sent the pictures.
Yes,
of that. And Mike was the lead person who kind of gave us a little bit of an insight into.
Jumped out of his car, ran up, helped the guy get out of the car, being afraid maybe it could catch fire or the like. So, multiple, you're right. He can.
With a lot of hats.
That's exactly it. So he'll be doing the swearing in of all of the 24 members. What I'm doing is an overview just of the legislation as we draft it and what our charge is. What's really impressive, Kevin, is you're seeing online, and again, anyone going in, promoteprevent.com, will see the folks who are on the commission, because it spans medical health professionals, criminal justice professionals, mental health folks, educators, people across the board who are going to be able to work together to identify. It's a 3-point thing. First is what is working already, what's evidence-based in the fields of prevent, as we're preventing people from any behavioral health disorder, number one. The second is how can we better fund what already is working? Sometimes we do these things in silos. People don't know what the other profession's doing, so we want to cross and be able to be effective. And then the third is to set goals, 1 year, 5 years, 20 years out, to see how are we changing society and making a difference, so that we have studies that go back to the 80s right now identifying the need to do just this. And our hope is to make sure to be able to have tangible benefits and deliverables that will have come out of this commission.
What is the lifespan of this commission? Is there a sunset?
There is.
To it?
Yeah, we have it just from now, February of this year, to February of next year, with the goal. Typically, in state government, you look for the budget cycle is often a manner. So we know we have a budget cycle that for us in the House has started right now. So we vote in April. We may have some recommendations this April, but we want to have all our work done by next February so that we're able to make sure within this legislative 2-year cycle we're able to take action and or have fun.
Is it take action? Do you put forth a report to the state? Who compiles this? Is this, are there going to be subcommittees off the main committee?
There are.
How's that working?
So perfect questions all throughout. So one, there will be a report of this special commission that we'll put together, and there are going to be subcommittees. My background was criminal justice. I used to be an assistant district attorney, so a lot of it would look at someone's record. They could have like an 8 or 10 page record and would say, what could we have done when that young person had a first shoplifting? You know, is there something we could have done to envelope them with some kind of programs and that could have kept them out of a career of crime?
Right.
So that'll be one. There's other. Beth Israel Deaconess, we were at the hospital a few months ago, and they said, look, we need to help people before they come into the emergency room where they're really far down the line and they can be very, very sick. We need to be able to come up with manners to have people earlier on address what could be either mental health issues or some behavioral health issues. So that's going to be another subcommittee. There'll be others in education and the like. So perfect questions throughout. That way, each of these subcommittees will make reports to us so we have a finished product next February for action.
Obviously, the opioid epidemic is not known just to the state of Massachusetts. In your development, did you look nationally across the country to see what was working, and is this kind of a flagship for the nation?
It really is, and thank you again for that, because what we have, what gave us, there was a June report of just a little over a year ago, a program from the Institute of Medicine of the National Academies that talked about unleashing the power of prevention, gave the very theoretical things that should be done, and then very sadly, and I'm authorized to talk about it, a young man who works for me, his aunt passed away. She was one of the 1,600 odd folks who passed away from an opioid overdose back in 2015. And we talked about, you know, he is a leader in his family. He was there with his grandmother when the doctor came in to say to his grandmother, your daughter has just passed, his aunt. And he looked outside, and out there were three young children who their family was going to have to try to decide how to take care of. And he was reflecting to me. He said, Jim, this is affecting generations of people.
Sure.
And now those children are at risk. One thing that's proven is if a family member has an addiction, the other children, the likelihoods are off the charts of what could happen with them. So we discussed at length what can we do about it. And I'm proud of Ben. Ben really was the driving force with this, Ben Thomas, to write the legislation. We brought in some experts, made sure that we all worked together to bring it together. And tomorrow it's a good start to come out of some incredible sadness, a good way to try to make something meaningful happen.
And again, just so folks know what we're talking about the Promote Prevent Commission that's going to be meeting tomorrow. Be swearing in, there'll be introductions, they'll give the charge and some of the next steps. This is going to be tomorrow at the State House, the Members Lounge, third floor, next to room 348. Remember, next to room 348. And these are going to be monthly meetings, so are they going to be around the same time, or will you set those tomorrow?
What we do is, well, with the 23 members, we're trying to find one...
23?
23 commissioners.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So,
that's
so
a heck of a commission.
It is. And when you look look at some of the folks you have there, it runs the gamut of people. And by the way, that's one of the things we wanted to bring together, saying just as I talked of how a loss of one person to addiction has a tremendous impact on a whole family. These issues go across the state budget because if we can start addressing earlier on someone's life and try to get them programs that are proven to be effective, we're saving in the criminal justice field. So that line item, we're saving for some of the public health issues, we're saving for some of the school issues and the like. There is an economic incentive to do all this work, but what's more important is to say what's the value going to bring for society to really help people early on and really make a difference in each of these areas.
Find out more information about what we've just got done talking about with State Representative Jim Cantwell, promoteprevent.com. That's the website. That's where I was reading the agenda. It's already posted
right
on the website, and I would think that you'll give regular updates. Will there be a blog or something if folks want to follow along?
Absolutely, for both. There'll be regular updates, and we will have several for the commissions. We will break off, as we mentioned, to each of our subcommittees.
Right.
But we have public hearings, so we will be going out and about around the state to make sure that we're highlighting programs that are working very well. And I definitely will report back. We know we've got some federal officials who are going to come and testify. We have state leaders who will come. It's going to be a very exciting year-long project.
Fourth Plymouth District Representative, none other than State Rep. Jim Cantwell joining us. Website or number for folks to call you other than for this project, but
sure.
If they're a constituent of yours?
Absolutely. If people have questions on this or any issue at all, you can call me. It goes right to my cell phone, is 781-837-1960, or at the State House, 617-722-2140. My email is easy. It's just my name, jim@jimcantwell.com. And if you go to the State House website, you'll see, you can just do www.jimcantwell.com as my website. So we link to this here, too. So anyone listening, pleased to hear from you, and I'd be happy to work together on issues that are of concern to you.
Thank you very much for joining us this evening, Kevin. Representative, and getting here in a timely fashion. We will step aside for just a few moments. When we come back, more Monday Night Talk right here on 95.9 WATD.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
Daddy, I used that tea kettle to melt the ice off your windshield. Now there's beautiful and pretty crisscrosses and sparkly spider webs all over the windshield.
What?
Can we do Mom's too? Can we?
Oh, windshield broken? My boys do a good job.
My dad did a great job. 1-888-64-TINIES. Just call.
Welcome back to Monday Night Talk. Don't just listen, say something. Call 781-837-4900. We now return to Kevin Tachi and Monday Night Talk.
All right, we're back, and it just dawned on me. Mark,
what's that?
The first hour of Jimmy's. It's not really an hour. It's 45 minutes. But we have...
Are we Jimmy jammed?
We are.
Who knew?
Who knew? So Representative Jim Cantwell walks out the door, and yet in comes another Jim. His name is Jim Pereira. He is a candidate for mayor in the city of Brockton. And he's going to give us a little bit of a little... Let's start off with you giving a little bit of a little bit about yourself.
Great. Well, thank you for having me. First and foremost, my name again is Jimmy Pereira. I am a lifelong resident of Brockton, Massachusetts. And actually, I took a little hiatus. I went to Springfield, Mass. for about 10 years.
What if there are voters listening, Jimmy?
Well, I think it's...
Just say you visited Springfield.
Yeah, well, I had a good experience there, and it wasn't on a good note that I ended up there. I grew up in Brockton, as I said earlier, and single-family household. Mom had two jobs, and it was a little troublesome. It caused a little headache here and there for my mom and at school as well. So it led to the point where I got in trouble with the law and went out into Springfield because I got caught up into the system, the Department of Youth Services, so I was committed to DYS for about till the age of 18, and there came a point in time where they said, well, now you're gonna have to go to Springfield just because it's not a good situation that you put yourself in, and it's better that you go out there and get out of your comfort zone. So by doing that, I went on and completed high school and got into college and actually worked there for a year and then transitioned back over here to home in Brockton, where I work as a regional planner for the community and the region as well.
What's it like working for the Old Colony Planning Council? You get Pat and a bunch of good folks over there who it's a regional organization that kind of takes an eye, takes a good look at the transportation needs for, 13, 14 communities?
Yep, 14 and growing sometimes. Though. Communities that come in. And they're great mentors as well, the people that I work with, Pat, including Pat for certain. And
Pat Chiarella.
Yeah, Pat Chiarella. That's something that I really value, being there at Old Colony Planning Council. And being there, being able to look at what's going on in the region, you get great insight and great information on what's going on. You understand the whole pattern and the process of looking at traffic and looking at how we fix our roads and the troubles that we face, funding, and just the method of paving as well, and the whole process as well, and looking at that, working with the state on a collaborative effort.
Mark, would you like to jump in on this conversation?
Just from my own knowledge, what's the catchment area for the Old Colony Planning Committee from north to south? What are we talking about here?
So we got about, and actually it's been growing from 14, but we have as far north as Avon, Easton, as far east as Easton, including Brockton. We have as far south down as Plymouth, cities, towns along the coast, such as Kingston, Duxbury. Mm-hmm. And it changes depending on, you know, whether it be the interest of the community and the possibilities of collaboration.
So you get the true South Shore.
Yeah, definitely. I know. Yeah, that always changes as well, too.
Right.
Hard to say. So we just call it Old Colony Region.
Gotcha. Yeah.
So what was it that made you say, I think I want to run and be the CEO of the city of Brockton? What was it?
It was, I want to say, a conglomerate of things. I've made an investment in Brockton. I'm a homeowner. I have two children that are growing up in Brockton. They have a future in Brockton. And I know how hard it was for me growing up in Brockton, coming up in a single family household. And just the insight that I have as a planner, the things that I've learned in college, the things that I've learned back in Springfield, the places that I've been abroad as well. And I'm able to be an innovative thinker. I go to sleep with a notepad by the side of my bed just because it's things that are just going in my mind and thinking about the plans as well of getting things done. And that's what we do as a planner. We're all inclusive. And the benefit that I have, and not me to toot my own horn, but being a planner, you're very... you have an interdisciplinary way of learning things and a way of investing in that type of academia. So,
Have you ever been appointed to a board? I'm, don't mind me, Jim.
No worries.
Waving our next guest into the room.
Yeah.
Of course, you don't say that. I just pulled the curtain back for the radio audience. Have you ever been appointed to a board or ran for office before?
I haven't. I've taken courses in politics, advanced placement, political science in high school, and I've worked with government. Being in Springfield, I was a healthy design coordinator. I've worked with the planning department and the engineering department on improving the policies and the way that they do transportation. We put together a ad hoc bicycle pedestrian committee that we're looking to move and work with the city council there in Springfield and the mayor department on solidifying that. So I've dibbled and dabbled, and I've always had a appetite for politics, and just not that, but being a statesman, being a public servant. And that's why I got into regional planning, into the school, because I wanted to work for the people, and more so including everything else as well, like the environment. Regional planning is more to it than just, you know, like street traffic. It's community development, economics, there's laws, legal issues that you need to know about, and it's interdisciplinary, so you have to take a little bit from everything: criminal justice, sociology. And I've taken a bit of everything and made sure that I look at every piece of it, but also listen to those that advise me as well. So
did you have an interest initially, whether the run for school committee or ward council or at large? Did you consider that before saying, I'm going
to
run for mayor?
Yeah, I thought about it, but I wanted to be, I feel like, in the most effective position, the spokesperson for the city. Brockton has, from just being out of Brockton and telling people, yeah, I'm from Brockton, it's had a bad connotation to it, and just because of the perception of crime, and it doesn't have to be like that. And I know there's low-hanging fruits, that issues that we could tackle and address and shine a better light on Brockton. So,
Mark?
In your opinion, what are some of the issues coming up on the horizon in the upcoming race, and what will you look to do to tackle some of those issues and problems?
Well, for one, something that's already been there is the homelessness problem that we've had. Mm-hmm. And I think the approach should have been a housing first initiative, something that we look at, and it's happening across the country already, but having housing first is you provide a place for the homelessness to at least rest their head, and it'd be a more consistent basis rather than what we have now, is that they have to leave early in the morning and find something to do.
Mm-hmm.
And with this initiative, you're able to stay at this place, you're provided treatment, you're provided services such as work readiness, job readiness training, there's hygiene products available for you. So for example, in Springfield, is a Friends of the Homeless, they have a development there where it's a dorm style. You come in and, you know, you have your place where you can put your belongings, and next door there's a cafeteria, there's a conference room, there's meeting rooms, places where you could get workshop training. And one thing that I thought about, right across the street from there, there's a blighted lot. There's just a brownfield. And that's somewhere where you could have a garden, so where they can go and whether meditate, learn something else, Tai Chi, just get something out of the box. Because from what I learned from just stepping out of Brockton was getting out of your comfort zone makes a big difference. It puts you in situations that you don't think that you'd ever been in before. And you grow from that. And I think that's something that we need in Brockton, someone that's innovative and that's been through different situations and has different experiences as well.
You have admitted to being a planner, somebody who plans.
Exactly.
Well, I need to know, what are your keys to success going to be? Because you're going to have to, first off, plan to secure one or two spots during the September preliminary.
Right.
From there, you're going to have to figure out a way how you're going to be successful to win the November 7th election.
Right.
What's the strategy moving forward to be able to? I mean, you're going to get past September.
Exactly.
Who knows how big the field's going to be?
Exactly. So it's a lot of face-to-face. I really want to go hard on the listening tour, like really knock on doors, really be there with people, go to the meetings. And I've been doing that already as a planner. I've gone to the meetings already. I'm listening to people. I do surveys all the time. I have documents in front of me where, you know, it's already out there. We've worked on programs and initiatives that's already going on in Brockton, so I'm privy to what's going on, and just making sure that I'm listening some more and making sure that I articulate what the plans are, and that we have that face-to-face contact, that we're out there, whether it be on social media, whether literature is getting passed out, and just making sure that we have our foot on the ground and make sure that we're everywhere.
Well, you said you've already been out there. What are you hearing? What are people saying to you? What are their concerns about the city of Brockton right now, 2017?
So, as we know, the homelessness population, as I said, but the conditions of our roads, the situation of different streets in the way that they're being paved as well. There's streets that have gone a long time not getting paved, and that
don't
whole process
me,
as
don't,
well.
Don't get me started.
Right, and that whole process as well as the antiquated process. There should be a level of service where we grade the streets, and there's a list from F to A, and that's how we get the most bang for our buck. We make sure we hit where we need to most and then work down the list as well. But there's a bunch of other issues, and I want to listen to more people and make sure that I get all of it. And you know, the list could go on and on, but there's a bunch of them out there that we're dealing with that we're already playing for. Education is one of them as well. I know there's a school that's going to be closed down, and that's still
the
up
Goddard,
there as well, the Goddard.
That's and, the talk.
Exactly, and where the students going to go, how are we going to deal with that, and looking at the budget as well. So that's a big issue that, you know, that we need to bring everyone to the table and look at where we are putting our resources at. So
again, we're speaking with Jimmy Pereira. He is a candidate for mayor in the city of Brockton. Mark, I like hogging all the time here. Do you want to throw a question at Mr. Pereira?
Sure. The current mayor and incumbent has relied on a long list of donors and a rather large campaign war chest.
Large. Yes. Huge.
Huge. What's your campaign doing to spread the word of your run for mayor and bolster fundraising? Are you having any major events coming up or social media?
Yeah, we're planning on having an event coming soon. It'll be the next month, early next month. And really, yeah, boots on the ground, having to make sure that we're out there, and social media, making sure that we're reaching out. It's a grassroots effort, and it'll be donors from everywhere, as much places as possible. I've been to different places. I'm from a different background. I'm Cape Verdean. I've been to different places, Springfield. And we're just making sure that we get the word out there that we need.
Have you had the kickoff event yet? Did I miss it?
No, not yet.
Okay.
Yeah, we're still planning. We're solidifying the team, making sure that everyone has their roles.
Okay.
Making sure that everything is down to a T, and that we're planning, make sure that we're listening to everything, keeping our ears to the ground, and being effective in every way possible. So,
Who are you working with? Are you working with anybody in the city or somebody who understands city politics? Or
yes, I'm not gonna say any names, but we're still formulating everything. But yeah, people that are active in the community, people that really know a lot about Brockton and are great advisors, people that are not yes men, people that I could bounce ideas off of, and they'll be 100% true to their word to me, to let me know that, you know, if it's right or wrong and what they think about it, and just people that I know that I could rely on. So people that I trust.
You look at the city of Brockton, it's a melting pot.
Yes.
Many cultures.
Right.
And Cape Verdean,
yes.
Haitian, Ecuadorian.
Right, right.
You name it.
Latino, everything.
Yeah, you get the Lithuanian village.
Lithuanian,
you get
Greek, everything. Yeah,
got Irish and Irish
Italian,
and Italian. Yep. There's still a common fabric in that city. How do you bring a city of nearly 100,000 together?
You learn about every culture. And that's what I did as a student. Geography and regional planning, and I minored in ethnic and gender studies, and it's just being intuitive with culture. I've lived with, in the foster care system, being in Springfield, relocating over there, I've lived with people from different backgrounds, Greek, Italian, Hispanic, Jamaican, African-American, just everything, and you get different insights. You taste different foods, so you know there's different styles to it, and you just have to really be culturally competent and respect people's culture, respect people's background, value what they bring to the table, whether it's Italian food, whether it's Haitian culture, whether it's the dances, whatever it is, you make sure that you take your time to learn about it. So
I think that's actually one of the keys for the success of Brockton, is celebrating the multicultural aspect of its own neighborhood. And I think that I personally feel that Brockton is starting to do that a lot more. Right, so right. More power to you.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, and there's ways to do it that I think will be very effective. So now,
if you are the next mayor sworn in 2018, you'll mm-hmm. be working with city councilors.
Yes. Yes.
Give me your thoughts. I mean, we've seen a tumultuous relationship between mayors and that governing body and the city council. Give me your thoughts on being able to work together.
I'm excited. And I say that from the bottom of my heart because I love working with people. As a regional planner, that's what we're supposed to do. Whether it be from code of ethics or just theory of planning, it's inclusiveness and making sure that the transparency is clear, making sure that transparency is key, that make sure the communication is clear, making sure that we're always on the same page and that the line is always open. And I feel it's going to be great. There's a lot of learning to do. There's a lot of just building bridges with each other and just getting to learn a lot from each other. And I'm looking forward to it, really. I'm excited about it, and I'm just confident that this is going to be a big, great change for Brockton. So,
you're mobilizing now. You're getting things mm-hmm. together. Where are you in the process in regards to whether it's a website, social media outreach? Right. You got anything already developed yet or what?
All that is in the development right now. Right now, as we speak, I have people like working, creating websites, formulating the sitemap, just getting everything, whether it be photographers, everything mm-hmm. coordinated, and they're doing it as we speak right now. So all that is formulating.
How important was it? I mean, I believe you're the first one out of the box. I don't know of any other candidate that's get to announce that they're jumping in on this race. Mm-hmm. How important was it that you at least got the word out that, hey, I'm a candidate?
I wanted to get it out early. I wish I even done it even earlier, just because Brockton needs it. Brockton needs it, and I think it's about time. It's about time that we bring somebody innovative, proactive, someone that's ahead of the curve and not reactive, and that's what I'm about. So.
Any nerves about age? And I bring this up mm-hmm. in a two-prong way. Mm-hmm. While you're young, mm-hmm. it doesn't mean that it's impossible for you to be elected. Look at young Mr. Jack Lally, and I believe that there are other large municipalities that have had, was it New, I'm not sure if it's
Fall New, River.
Fall River.
Fall River, yeah.
Had a relatively, a young man who in his 20s who got elected.
Yeah, I believe he's actually younger than me, but and
do you look, to individuals like that and go, hey, listen, I know that I can, I'm electable.
Definitely.
And that age shouldn't be a number, or what do you say in regards to
I say
to
my actions speak louder than my age, and I've said that time and time again. I'm a current homeowner. It's my first home, and as I said, I'm a proactive thinker. I got my college degree, and I'm looking to pursue my education more as a master in public administration. Excuse me, going for my real estate license, and as a planner, you there's something which you call AICP certified, and it just speaks to the bar of your caliber of knowledge of in the planning field. So that's things that I look forward to, and I'm a scholar. That's just what I am. I'm a scholar, and I look forward to just going hard on education to make sure that we spearhead that issue in Brockton, whether it be STEM knowledge, make sure that that's the pedagogy that we install in the curriculum, and just ways of make sure that happens, because education is big with me. So
can you go with STEAM? With that, yeah, because they always drop the arts in there. And I'm an arts guy, so
you're right. Actually, you're right.
I appreciate that.
I'm taking notes because you're right. And actually, I'm an arts guy too, because I've done that poetry and sure. college. You know, that's something that you do, painting.
Yeah,
and I still dabble in
theater.
It.
You do theater?
Yeah, actually, I've done acting, and I still do acting as well. So
get
that's
his name.
Something. Yeah,
get his name.
Take a flyer.
Yeah, nice. Oh, Raising the Sun. Okay, definitely do. Actually, the first time I did theater was in Springfield. It was Who's on My Side, and it was a great play, and it was something about just the, the struggle of a young youth in the urban environment, and just going just through the struggles.
Right, so I think he just verbally bought a ticket for this.
Well, oh, yeah. Well, should you get so elected, let's talk about some theatrical celebrations
It's not unheard of that elected officials don't participate in shows like this.
I don't see why not. This would be something great.
Don't we know an elected official who might be on the show?
She's not in the show. She was in the show. We did this show 6 years ago, and City Councilwoman.
I stand corrected.
Shayna Barnes played the lead.
She calls herself a triple threat, but
nice.
Just kidding, Shayna. She was shooting guns today. I don't want to get upset.
Yeah.
All right, so Jimmy, we want to thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you, and we definitely
wish you, and we wish all candidates who are going to be running in this race this year the best of luck, because it isn't easy, whether it's out there knocking on doors, whether it's getting out your message, or even when you guys go face to face and you guys are verbally duking it out about about this great community.
Yep. Yeah, and that's what it is, being Brockton. You got to be a champion. So
you have to
ready
be
to fight for it.
At the heart of a champion.
Exactly.
Jimmy, we wish you the best of luck.
Thank you, sir. Thank you for having me.
We are going to step aside. We're not done with the City of Champions, as we have a couple of members of the City Council that will be joining us right here on Monday Night Talk, heard only on 95.9 WATD.
95.9 WATD FM Marshfield and 95.9 WATD.com, the South Shore's news, weather, and traffic station. This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
McGuigan's Pub in downtown Whitman is a great place to unwind any night of the week. Stop in for Singo on Monday night. There's the always popular Irish Sessions every Tuesday night, half-price pizza every Wednesday night, and Friday and Saturday nights feature the best in live entertainment. Catch your favorite game on McGuigan's 8 big flat screens and enjoy a pint at their beautiful 54-foot mahogany bar. Whether you're a regular or coming in for the first time, you're always a friend of McGuigan's Pub, 546 Washington Street, Whitman Center.
Monday Night Talk continues all week long. Go to 95.9WATD.com/Monday Night Talk and keep in touch on Facebook and Twitter. And now, more Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
Okay, we're back. And, we get two of the three city councilors joining us. I believe by phone we will hear from Mr. Jack Lally any minute now. He'll probably call in at about 5 past. Right, I'll turn that down, Larry. I'm sorry. My bad. I only turned it up so I could be able to hear when we were coming back in, but folks at home don't want to hear that. They don't care. We have joining us at-large counselor, Wynn Falwell.
Good evening.
Hello. And Ward 5 city councilor, Ann Beauregard.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm great.
And we're expecting Ward 6 city councilor, Jack Lally, to be joining us as well. And it's going to be a great conversation. I can't wait. And we have so much to talk about. And this is going to be nearly an hour. Mm-hmm. I say nearly an hour because we're going to give Mark a couple of minutes at the end to promote Raisin in the Sun. So we'll do that somewhere around 7:55. We'll give you a couple of moments.
Sounds good.
To promote it. But up until then, we could talk a little bit about the Brockton City Council. The purpose, and we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, myself and Wynn and Ann, and the idea is the three of you are first-time city councilors. Wynn, of course, you are more so the veteran, seeing that you served on school committee and you were a mayor. So,
yes,
you get a little bit. You get a couple more stripes, but you're also somebody who is, you're getting acclimated to the city council, as are you. And I think I'm going to start with Ann.
Oh, thanks.
It's not a bad thing, Ann.
No, it was.
Yeah, but you see, I could start with Wynn, but I want to ask you, and when we get Jack on the line. Here you are. You're a year in to your first term. And when you look back to when you were first elected, before you were elected, in your head, what was going through your mind before you, when you came down to, wasn't there like a count? There was like a...
Yes, there was a recount. You love that. So come on, say it.
I was on vacation.
Yes. The three vote chick. Say it. You'll feel good about it. Okay. So this is just a demonstration. Anyone listening this evening, you can win by one vote. And there was a recount.
I
won by three votes. What happened here, though, is I was known in the city, and thanks to Kevin in a way, because I used to be a regular on another radio station weekly and all around Brockton.
Yes. And we're trying to squeeze 8 minutes of information into 3 minutes. She was sometimes successful, sometimes I was like, Ann. But she was the person who loves spreading a good word about the city of Brockton.
And there's plenty to spread. So that's one of the reasons I'm excited you have us here tonight.
Well, now, so the original question, not to get distracted about how you got in, but what was your thought process as to what the job would entail being a city council What was it like before you were elected? What was your perception of being a city councilor?
Well, since I had attended many of the city council meetings before and, you know, mobilized on a variety of issues, it wasn't a complete shock. The surprises were more the deadlines of getting filing a resolve. I am pretty much the resolve queen. I have submitted more resolves probably than any other city councilor because the goal was to be as transparent as possible and inform the public as much as possible of what's taking place in the city and what they, you know, realize their concerns are, because they're so, some of them are totally, everyone wants their streets paved, and other things are concerns, whether it's animals, whether it's economic development, etc. So I knew there was going to be homework. I was already attending all the meetings except one. The only one I have never ever been to was an IT meeting, and I've attended them. You meet the individuals that are part of it, and you let people know that they can be part of all these different situations. So the only thing, like I said, that came as a surprise to me was that I had these deadlines for filing a resolve, and they can't be flexible generally because the documents have to be filed a certain time, our signatures have to be on them. And
so it was the art of learning the procedure.
Yes, that would be the best way to describe it. Similar to everyone, you know, it can be a teacher at an elementary school and a high school, but you learn different responsibilities with each, but the general gist of it is the same. So that compare it that way.
Now, joining us on the phone line, if you both want to say hello to Mr. Lally, Councilor Lally is on the phone. Jack, welcome to the conversation.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Mr. Lally would have been here, but he's under the weather and felt he was kind enough to make sure that the rest of us didn't end up getting sick as well. So
he was a very wise decision.
We appreciate you.
I count it as part of my steadfast commitment to public safety.
You get an A for effort, that's for sure. I don't know if you heard the question that I had posed to Councilor Beauregard, but the question was, looking at when you're running for office, give me a comparison as to your perception of what being an elected official was going to be like and what the reality has been since you've been in office for a year.
There's a lot of differences that people, you know, that you might not pick up on. Like, my biggest concern is roads, and I never realized how expensive it was to pave roads. There's a lot that goes on behind the scenes that, you know, it is public information. It is out there. It is available to people, but it's, you know, either not always easy to reach, or it's frankly a little boring, and, you know, somebody might not want to take a look through it. But it is very, you know, it's not very different, but it is a little different. You get a greater appreciation for a lot of the things that go on, I think.
Council, I would ask you, the at-large councilor, what's it been like for you? Again, serving as a mayor, as a school committee member, was it easy to get acclimated to being a city councilor?
I think it was easier for me, having been on the school committee and having served as mayor, but I think the really enjoyable part about being a councilor is that you're one of 11. So now you get to exchange ideas with 10 other people. And we run the age gamut from Jack, who's a millennial, up to Councilor Studensky and I, who may be considered the fossils of the city council. And then we have people who are middle-aged. And so you kind of learn and grow from listening to people, and especially our colleagues who come from different cultural backgrounds, Councillor Barnes and Councillor Rodriguez. So I think that's the most fascinating part of serving as a councillor at large. You still have interests that span citywide neighborhoods, but being able to learn and listen and grow, interacting with your fellow councillors, is, I think, it's an education you couldn't pay for.
Mr. Rushto,
for you in particular, having been mayor and school committee, what was it that drew you back to public service and to be a city councilor.
You know, it was the simplest of things. The same issues that we were wrestling with back in the 90s seem to have come back and visited the city again. Making sure there's adequate funding for schools.
Mm-hmm.
Making sure that we maintain a high level of public safety services. Economic development. You know, good, clean, honest, open government. Being fully transparent with people.
Wait, that doesn't happen anymore?
I'm being smart.
I apologize, you are, yes.
I would say the three of us, and I'll speak for them now because they can answer for themselves, but we three happen to really believe in transparency. We like the media. We like the fact that we have social media. And we think the more that people know about what goes on in Brockton, warts and all, the good, the bad, and the ugly, we think they'll be more inclined to support us in whatever policies that we want to implement. And I may be wrong. I'll let my colleagues jump in here, but I think people appreciate you just being honest and upfront. No hidden agendas. No political BS.
Jack, would you agree with that?
I agree with that entirely. People are given the full story, the complete honest truth and all the information you have, they're liable to come to the same conclusion that you did, or they'll empathize with your situation. No, I can't think of a counselor who doesn't, but I know personally my goal is to, provide everyone who calls in with questions or concerns, provide them with as much information as I have, and to just be completely honest. They might not like, exactly what they hear. They might not like hearing that it'll take a while longer for something to happen than they'd thought, but they appreciate your honesty. You're not deceiving them and giving them any false hope or anything.
Ann?
Well, I believe it's, I agree both with both my colleagues, and that was my goal, is to get the information out to the people. Where something is, how it happens, the steps people take, just a complete understanding. I mean, they've got enough going on in their lives, but the more you are upfront with people, the more you give them the information, then they can decide if they agree or disagree or come back with more questions. So information, honesty. Directly, yes.
Okay. Now, a part of your duties being on, it's odd because we had State Rep Jim Cantwell in here, and we were talking a little bit about committees, and part of being a city councilor are committees, subcommittees, in order to do city business, whether it's ordinance, you name it. Give me your thoughts on knowing that was kind of like a side piece to being a city councilor, that there was, in addition, almost like being, a state rep where you get committee assignments. Same thing here. If you want to share some of the committees that you're on and some of the interesting things that you get to learn about the city, more so in depth than you may read in the paper or just by, seeing stuff on social media.
Well, I would, Ann and I and Jack are all in the accounts committee. I would say it's interesting that a lot of substantive work goes on in the accounts committee and in the other subcommittees. Because you don't feel pressed for time, you don't have as lengthy an agenda, so you can get to, kind of look in things in detail. The accounts committee, I think, has functioned very well. We meet very regularly. We look through all of the expenditures that have been put on what's called a warrant, and we go through them line item by line item. Anything that jumps out at us that looks like it's maybe not in the public's best interest, we'll question it. We'll ask for the backup material. The same with public safety. We'll go through issues of licensing and code enforcement and things like that. Finance committee is the committee of the whole, all 11 councilors. So anytime you're debating a financial issue, an appropriation, acceptance of a grant, that goes to the entire group so that people can weigh in on their thoughts about, is the money being expended appropriately? Are we getting the bang for the buck that we really should? So I would say the committee structure at every level of government, even in the Congress, is really where you can delve into issues in great detail and make sure that things are functioning the way they should.
Anne?
Well, the same thing. I mean, I'm on the accounts committee like Wynn and Jack. And again, that meeting's tomorrow night. It's 6 o'clock. It's open to the public. It's in the GAR room. And we get homework. That's and it was funny because I was talking to another reporter one time. And they said, you take stuff home? I said, yes. I spent a couple of hours going through this. I mean, I'm in a little bit more.
You want to better comprehend what's going on with
exactly. it. Exactly. I mean, I'm in a better advantage. I was an accountant for many years, both manual and automated, you know, my undergrad's in finance. So I understand it a little bit better. But everyone has their abbreviations, a little input, and you need to understand whether it comes through the schools, through which department. And so I spent a lot of time on that because I look at it this way. We don't have any taxpayers that are turning around and saying, we have so much money, we don't mind if you increase our taxes. We don't mind if you waste our money. No, no one says that. So that's what I was looking at. I'm on real estate, and the first real estate committee meeting I attended, it was mobbed. We were in the committee room. I said, what's going on here? And I'll let Jack speak to that because that was in his ward. And now I'm serving on traffic. And I invite everyone to attend that because what Jack and I had brought up before, streets, streets, streets. If people aren't looking for their streets to be paved, they want sidewalks so the kids would be safe, all justifiable.
Well, totally. You had you and I had a kind of an off-mic conversation. I don't know if you want to share a twinkle of it, but you kind of gave an analogy to how streets are done, and if they were to continue a certain way, it could continue the thought.
Okay, no, actually, again, this goes to my colleague here because he has the most.
Yeah, Jack did bring it up when he kind of started off the conversation. Jack, would you like to pick up where Ann was going to start regarding streets and kind of the mindset depending on who you are for a city councilor and how often streets are done in communities?
Well, usually, as a good rule of thumb, a city councilor. The DPW will try and give each city councilor one road in their ward paved every year or a fiscal year. A lot of the problems that especially Ann and I face being on the east side and a lot of Campanelli homes and whole neighborhoods built like that is the roads were improperly paved at the beginning, and they were improperly, I believe the houses were improperly subdivided. So all the roads remain private ways unless they've been fixed.
If I could just ask real quick, is it possible that that's how it was zoned for the time, and that's why it is the way it is, and that zoning has changed over the years?
That could very well be. I don't have a direct answer for how it, you know, the origin of that. I remember hearing something about subdivisions, but I could be wrong.
Okay.
But what happened is, and I represent about 200 roads, about 76 of them now are private ways. Oh. So anyone who calls up and says, hi, I live on Bourne Street, or I live on Maplewood Circle, you know, or a bunch of different streets, they call up and they say, hey, my road's in terrible shape, I was hoping to get it paved. They, before they're even, they're not even eligible, they pay the same taxes, the same fees, you know, they're financially on the hook just as much as any other citizen, but they're never going to see any difference in their road unless it's changed.
And the three of us are, that's kind of an issue that we've gelled around, that we feel that if you're paying the same taxes, you should have the same services, you should have the same amenities in your neighborhood, and certainly, you know, a paved street every once in a while, or sidewalks for young people to walk to school, you know, we're going to keep the focus on that. The honest answer is we don't have the money in the city now to go out and do what we really should do in terms of accepting streets and getting them paved.
Right.
But if you keep the attention on it, I think over time we'll have a will have a positive effect on that whole issue.
Do we have a rough number how many streets there are in the city of Brockton?
Yes, you can take all this.
I'm just looking for a basic answer.
Yes. Here you go. Total number of streets, 1,269 here.
Okay, so am I being led to believe that only 11 streets a year get paved?
Something like that, yes.
Seven, because the ward, the council is at large, we don't pick a street.
Oh! So the number is
even
smaller.
Well, the mayor gets a couple, usually.
Oh, okay. All right. No,
well, to build off of that, just for some perspective into expenses, we don't get very much money from Chapter 90.
Right.
Which is the money we'd use
local
to pay
aid,
the
yep.
roads. Local aid, yes. So, Just to give you an idea of the cost, Tina Ave near Holbrook is going to be paved. The money's in the budget to pave Tina Ave this year, and it's going to cost $1.8 million.
Really?
A lot of the roads, especially the roads going back to my ward and Ann's ward, they were paved incorrectly at the beginning, and they haven't been touched. So you've got roads from the early 60s that weren't paved correctly.
By developers, right.
By developers. Mm. And the pipes underneath are too small. It increases the expenses for roads in our area. I believe the state did, or the city did, a study a couple of years ago, and they sought to determine how much money it would cost to bring every single road in Brockton up to what Massachusetts would consider sort of adequate or acceptable.
Would it be a mini big dig price?
It would be $1.2 billion.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
And that is about three times the city's total budget for this year.
Sure.
So it is mammoth. I put it into context by saying, you know, going back to, I represent about 200 streets. If you want me to pave every last road, you're going to have to elect me, re-elect me for 200 years. Mm.
But I think, I'm going to plead ignorance here, but aren't there bigger issues than roads? Or is that the big thing with, because it's funny, because Jack's mentioning it, Ann's mentioning it. I can remember doing debates with Dennis Neary. When he's running and had an opponent, and people like going, you didn't get any of my roads paved. And so I'm just asking a rhetorical question, but is that really kind of the biggest thing?
Well, I was going to say, I don't think it's the biggest issue. I think if you did a poll of residents, they would say, we want safe streets and neighborhoods.
Mm.
We want public safety services increased. We want an adequate fire department, and we definitely want excellent schools with the programs and services needed. But the interesting thing about a street is you're reminded every day when you've got a lousy street.
And not only that, it affects everyone across the board, no matter who you are, and it affects you in your pocketbook. Because in the end, your car's going to the shop because you hit the wrong pothole on the wrong day. I mean, I'm not going to name any names, but this is a particular road I go out every day, and I have to go really slow. And there was a time when I'd just blast right through it, but now I realize how much it costs for me to blast through it. And I drive through the same road, and this road's been like this for as long I can remember. You know,
you did the young bull, old bull thing.
Yeah, you just.
And then if you think about it, if you went to sell your house and you had a nice modern paved street, sure. You had granite curbings, and you had, you know, appropriate signage, whatever it is, a stop sign at the end of the street, it's going to enhance your property value.
Sure,
so. Definitely,
absolutely, yeah. And I don't want to, I want to specify that I'm. This isn't an exaggeration, but I've had. Parents of young children tell me, you know, they have to take their kids somewhere else so they can use their bike or their scooter because the road is just too rough for them to, you know, to go play out front on. And at the same time, I've met adults caring for their parents or the parents themselves who can't go up and down their street. They rely on some kind of walking assistance, and they can't navigate the street. So it is, it's not the biggest issue out there, but it is something that, as Councillor Farwell said, it is something that they encounter every day, multiple times a day, and it shakes itself, sometimes literally shakes itself back into back in your memory.
And again, we are speaking with three city councilors from the city of Brockton doing something similar like we did a couple of weeks ago when we had some folks in from Weymouth. We had town council president, we had the mayor, we had a town councilor, and we had a one-hour conversation. It was a nice conversation about the town of Weymouth, doing something similar here with three folks who are in their first term as city councilors. We got at-large councilor Wynn Falwell. We also have Ward 5 councilor Ann Beauregard and Ward 6 councilor Jack Lally, and they're here. We're talking a little bit about what it's been like, you know, getting acclimated to city government, if you need to get acclimated, and finding out what some of the things are that they've delved into during their first year. We talked a little bit about subcommittees. Have those subcommittees generated anything newsworthy?
Oh yes.
I would say that.
Well,
yeah.
Again, I mean, it could be something that's just topical that you see on page 8 next to the obituaries, or it could be, boom, top of the fold.
This gentleman will tell you.
Oh sure, throw the hot potato in my lap. Thanks. No, I mean we have generated some interest in expenditures of money that which the accounts committee thought was inappropriate. And we will continue to do that, whether it's a department head or the mayor or whoever it is. I mean, it's just, that's the
It's function. Part of open government.
It's yes. Part of open government. And, you know, the thing you have to remember is it's not our money. It's their money.
Yes.
It's the money that people send in and expect that government, city government, will spend it appropriately. I would say... public safety has done well. We now, when someone applies for a business, a garage repair license, we meticulously go through all of the requirements, have them appear before us, ask them questions, and if they don't produce the information, we'll hold up issuing the license. I'd like to plug an ordinance that I have. It'll be read Tuesday night.
Please do.
Which will address the issue of hiring in the city, because you may know that that's been in the news.
Isn't that naughty word, nepotism?
Well,
and also there's been a little bit of an issue. I know that there was a lawsuit that was settled, $4 million to the plaintiff in regards to unfair, discriminatory hiring practices.
Yeah.
They said that right?
Yeah. And the process has to be open. You know, it's the year 2017. It should have been done years ago, but if there's an open position in city government, it needs to be properly posted. You need to have the resumes of the applications received. You have to, the ordinance, if it's enacted, Councillor Tom Monahan and I have worked on this because we're really committed to fairness and openness in filling city positions. You got to advertise for a minimum of 14 days. You've got to have the applications come in. You need to keep a log. You've got to interview the best qualified people. And we put into the ordinance that the department head and the personnel director will attest in writing that the best qualified person was hired. And I don't care if they're all from a particular segment of the community, as long as they're the best qualified, because again, it's not our personal staff. You're hiring career positions that are supposed to work on behalf of the residents of the city. And I think that begs the question of what can we do better? And this ordinance hopefully will address what we can do better and bring full transparency to the process.
Let's put a hold for a second. We're going to come back to this. We're going to just step aside for a moment. I do want to note that Councillor Monahan did celebrate his birthday.
Yes.
Just a couple of days ago.
Yeah.
Well, he may be somewhere in his 40s. I think his new hip is like a year old. So
no.
hopefully he's doing well. And we will step aside. You are listening to Monday Night Talk. More conversation with the Brockton City Councilors in just a few moments here on 95.9 WATD.
This weight loss segment brought to you by Signature Healthcare, providing a team approach to weight loss, including medical and surgical options. Here's Dr. Deborah Abeles, chief of Signature Healthcare's Weight and Wellness Center in Brockton.
When it comes to medical or surgical weight loss, patients now have more options than ever before. At our practice, we're always trying to guide patients to the option that makes the most sense for them. So for some, that may mean surgery to help them lose weight, put their diabetes into remission, or reduce the number of medications that they take. However, there are also less invasive options like our 12-week doctor-supervised medical weight loss program. Patients work with our dietitian and lifestyle counselors while receiving ongoing physician consultation to make sure they are losing weight safely and effectively.
To learn more about Dr. Abeles and see if Signature Healthcare's medical and surgical weight loss approaches may be right for you, visit mysignaturecare.org/weightloss.
Download the Monday Night Talk podcast from iTunes for free. Just search for Monday Night Talk, WATD. We now return to Kevin Tachi and Monday Night Talk.
And we're back for the final segment of Monday Night Talk, your President's Day holiday edition of Monday Night Talk, as we have Wynn Falwell, Ian Borgat, and I think Jack is still on the line. Jack, you still there?
I am.
All right, see, he didn't go anywhere. Good, good, good. So you might have stepped away for some cough medicine or something, but glad you're still with us. Or a cough drop. So we ended off our last segment talking a little bit about hiring practices. You have an ordinance. When will this be heard? You said tomorrow night?
Yeah, it has to be. It has to go through readings. Yeah, I'm sorry, not tomorrow night. Tomorrow is finance. A week from today.
It gets confusing, doesn't it?
It does get confusing because we're so busy. Right. So a week from today will be the council meeting. The deadline for filing is tomorrow at 12 noon, but we've already filed it. So it'll be read next Monday. And then it'll be referred to the Ordinance Committee. Good thing you reminded me of that. And then it'll wind its way through the legislative process.
And do you want to kind of comment on the ordinance and the need to fortify how individuals, so there are no future questions? And also, those people who do say this person is qualified to do the job, but they basically are qualifying it with a signature saying, hey, I understand that I could be accountable down the road. Your thoughts?
I completely support the ordinance, the way it's phrased, everything else about it. So, no, I'm very impressed that he filed it. I'll support it when it comes in front of City Council for a full vote. You know, that's not a problem. I don't serve on the Ordinance Committee. I do attend all the meetings. I mean, that's what people don't realize. They see us, you know, on Monday nights, or, you know, we have our ward meetings, some of us.
Yeah.
But that's only a fraction of it. Yeah.
It's almost a full-time job, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah. And you're not born with all the knowledge. You have to continuously learn because you don't want to give people misinformation. I'm huge on that. I don't want to, you know, give people misinformation. So I'm at the Zoning Board of Appeals. I'm at the Planning Board to know what's going on and be there for the constituents.
I feel the same way with parenting. I didn't get that book when I had my three children. That, you know, all the nuances with rearing a child. You guys, we get some agreement here in the room. We didn't get that book. It's just a matter of, hey, you learn as you go. So, but it's good that at least you're taking it in, and that you guys are taking your job seriously. I want to give Jack a chance to kind of weigh in on the ordinance if he wants. Do you want to weigh in on the ordinance at all, Jack?
I think it's a good idea, certainly.
Okay.
You know, it's something that we, you know, should at least clarify to make sure we know exactly where the buck stops.
Okay. Looking at the lawsuit, have you heard a lot of feedback from people in regards to it? Is it more outcry on social media than anything else?
I think it's both. There are some people that just live for social media, and I think they live vicariously through others by...
The need for alternative news is there.
Yeah, the need for alternative news is there. But I do think of the people that I've spoken to, either in person or they've called me on one issue, but they've kind of used it as a segue this one, they want the best process. They don't want another one of these to occur. And I think they're right. We can't afford to allow the current system to go on.
Is this almost similar to... another ordinance or another move to make sure that if people are sitting on boards that at least they have proper quality. Have you and I not have a conversation about has there been such an ordinance filed in past, or is there something in the works in making sure that whoever's appointed to a committee or a board serving in the city has some of the proper qualifications?
There's been nothing that I know of filed in the past, you know, Brockton's a wonderful city, but change comes hard. I think, like most people, you get into a rhythm of doing things a certain way, and then all of a sudden something happens, like this lawsuit, and it kind of knocks you back, and you say, whoa, wait a minute, you know.
How did this happen?
This raises some meaty subjects that need to be addressed. And so then you do your best to protect the interests of the taxpayers, because, again, it's their money that would have to pay any judgment.
Let's change this. Let's change directions, and talk about a couple of hot topics. Since we've changed administrations down in D.C., one of the big concerns is our immigration reform. And I know that there have been many. There have been up to what, 5 or 6 churches in the city of Brockton that have opened the doors for of illegal immigrants who need sanctuary. There was talk back in October with the city council in regards to should something be done, should there be an ordinance regarding a sanctuary city, the city of Brockton, and there are other communities around the Commonwealth, around the country, that are also considering it because of our new administration, our new president.
Well, I'll answer the first part of that. First of all, I've been attending all these meetings. Brockton Interfaith Community is mobilized and spoken with the individuals from the ACLU and Immigration, MIRA, Massachusetts Immigration and Refugee Association. And what it is, first of all, it's a trust act that they're talking about. Second is there are sanctuary churches. Now, let's remember, these sanctuary church idea has existed since the pilgrims got here, so it's not some radical, you know, new idea or anything, and that is separate. That's not church and government, you know, church and state are separate.
Yes.
As far as I'm concerned, right now it has not come in front of the full city council. It's not even planned to be in front of ordinance committee meeting that's scheduled for March 20th. So for us to, you know, really get down and discuss.
Is this still time to file before the March 20th meeting? Or is there a deadline that has to be met?
That part I am not certain of. I know that it had been postponed by the request of the individuals, you know, asking for the Trust Act. And now I'm not sure where they are with, you know, do they want to present themselves in front of ordinance. They're trying to educate people about it. And I believe that's not a bad idea. I mean, again, there's tons of misinformation out there. And for, you talked about social media earlier.
Alternative news.
Yes, alternative news.
Let's just use that phrase.
Not to be confused with alternative facts, I hope.
Yes.
No.
Yes.
Okay. That's next week's show.
I just wanted to clarify.
No, but, you know, you say that, and we all have our picture on website, you know, situation. And people are calling us, and I say to people, okay, I understand where you stand, but right now this isn't even in front of us. So this is not something that we can, you know, vote on. It's not there for us to vote on. So that I try to inform people as much as possible and encourage, you know, certainly for your opinion, your feelings, and if you want any more information, where you can get it. But right now, we're not there.
Still,
you know,
pending,
able to vote on it. It's still pending.
Still pending.
It's the best
I'll write that on my paper. Still pending.
Yes.
Oh, something that's not pending, latest word regarding the power plant. There's a new face in town. Well, there's a new lead developer. The Brockton Power was trying to be a part of. They were going to sell something in the forward auction.
Yes.
And they were not successful. Now, supposedly, they're filing for their fourth extension. What's the thoughts? You got a local developer now, who's a construction magnate, who is going to look to push this forward. Any thoughts from the three of you in regards to this project?
I still think that the power plant would be a good idea. You know, I think it would be beneficial to the citizens of Brockton. A lot of the concerns raised were really dismissed upon further investigation, and the power plant itself would contribute some desperately needed tax revenue to the city.
Can I ask a quick question, Jack?
Yeah.
And my question would be, you went from a corporation, a company, Advanced Power, you had Siemens, this is an organization that specializes in building power plants. This is their specialty. And now you have an individual who is going to develop this, and he's going to seek a contractor to build it for you. Would you prefer somebody who specializes in building it safely, or would you prefer somebody who's just going to contract it out to somebody, you know, the lowest bidder, to build this in a neighborhood where you have schools, residents, traffic?
Well, cycle back to that.
Okay.
NASA's rockets were built by the lowest bidder. It's a terrible example, but it does highlight highlight that really it's not about who's building it, because we have codes and regulations and restrictions in place. Just because it's not a company building it, now right. It's somebody and their contractors, does not mean they have a different set of rules, they have a different set of guidelines. They have to obey the same restrictions, the same guidelines as the company would, or they're not going to be allowed to turn anything on. They're not going to be allowed to flip the switch.
Right.
Because the power plants are under heavy scrutiny by not only the state, but the federal government. So they... Whether it's a company that's done this 100 times or a man that hasn't done it once, they're going to have a close, watchful eye on them. And if something smells fishy, they're not going to be allowed to open up.
I do want to say to you, though, I did love your Steve Buscemi Armageddon line about the cheapest, you know, the NASA, because that's where that line comes from. Do you realize that we're sitting on... you know, something that was built by the lowest bidder. Remember that when he was getting ready to lift off?
Oh, yeah.
And he mentioned that? Just to make sure that I picked that up immediately.
I apologize for not properly quoting.
No, it's okay. I wasn't expecting you to give me a direct quote or air quotes or anything like that. Did you want to weigh
in? Well, I was going to say from a revenue standpoint, obviously the city would benefit, but the bottom line for me is I'm not going to tell a homeowner down on 11th Avenue in Ward 4 or on Plain Street in Ward 4 or a parent who drives their child to the Davis School that I don't care that you're concerned, I don't care that you're not worried about a reduction in your property value, I'm going to support the power plant, because I'm not going to support it. I think that this last gasp effort to obtain another extension is just like poking the citizens, particularly in that section of the city, in the eye and saying, I'm a rich man and I'm going to get what I want and I really don't care about you, and I'm going to stand with the residents. And that's not a political statement.
Right.
I would hope we would do that for anyone that's worried about their environment or their property
value. Well, the question I asked Jack was definitely a rhetorical question, and it was a question. First and foremost, as a media person, I have no dog in the fight. And it's, you know, ultimately it's going to be the residents of Brockton, the elected officials, everybody's going to come together one way or the other, whether it's going to be built or not, whatever's going to make for the most harmony in the community. I mean, I would want to see it, whether it's to build it or not. But my job is to ask those questions. And I know that's been the question I asked you, Jack, has probably been one of the most... the question that I've seen the most on social media is, you know, about the power plant. Yeah, is you know, this individual coming in here and building it, and you know, taking over the project when it's not somebody who's an expert. Not saying that the individual or the person who's part of another, you know, company is not capable. It's just that's what I have seen, so I put that out there too.
It's not his specialty, as I think what you're saying.
Yeah. Right, yeah. Right, right.
Yeah.
So to speak. So that's the concern, and that's what I'm asking. What other issues are we looking at here? And it's an election year for the city council, the mayor, the school committee. I mean, so what big things do you guys think you're going to be tackling other than following what's going to happen with the power plant? See what happens, but because that eventually, if it does get its extension, if it is able to sell power on the grid. I think the next thing is to come before the city council. I don't know if that's still being determined or not to purchase the water. Or
the suit is still pending.
Still right.
Pending. The city council suit against the mayor for allegedly exceeding his authority. The declaratory
selling that water.
Judgment filing, that still has to be heard. So a lot of different things that will be coming up that affect the power plant one way or the other.
When you look, I mean, we had Jimmy Pereira in here earlier, yes. running for mayor. Your thoughts... The three of you collectively, here you are. You guys are going from, I'm going to use the term, you guys are going from being the hunters to being the hunted, from being the candidate to becoming the incumbent. What's it like for you guys being on this side of the wall now where you've already served, you served time in office, you have a record, you've had a chance to show people what you can do, and you're laughing.
Well, I'm laughing. First of all, I'm opposed to the power plant, and I was we're going back what 8 or 9 years now.
Stop
the power plant, bumper stickers, the whole thing, meetings.
I've been reporting on it since 2007.
Yes. Oh no,
it was part of the 2007 city elections.
And remember,
and I was there
going to those meetings in Boston and monitoring all this, but. I mean, for someone like myself, I've already announced. I believe I have opponents. I'm not, I'm certainly going to continue doing what I'm doing. The goal is definitely for the streets. My big thing is economic development. Okay. And Wynn and I talk about this. And I always say the more that we have economic development in this community, which I believe that we've lacked a great deal of, will be beneficial to the taxpayers. Because chances are then their taxes won't have to go up. We'll get the benefits from it economically for our schools, for our streets, you know, public safety. I'm big on having a fire truck come to someone's house when it's burning down. And, you know, those are, things. Yes, those Good are the boy. Things we want to see. Yes.
I like weenie roast, but not that big.
Yeah, that's... And so that's where I don't see myself... I want to understand more about the ordinances. You know, someone says, oh, there's an ordinance, but it's a lot more involved than that. And I, again, it's continuing giving people the straight facts and letting them decide. I'm going to continue doing what I'm doing and just try to get better at it.
Jack?
I agree. It's something that... You know, these aren't our seats. They don't belong to us. It's not up to us to defend them. It's I don't view it as, you know, defending a seat. I view it more of as, you know, running again, saying, you know, if you do your job, if you do what's right for the people, if you keep them informed, you know, hopefully they'll consider you when you're up for re-election. But it is something that, you know, it's not the seats aren't ours, and whoever our constituents decide to place in that seat, we should do our very best to work with.
And I agree. I think if you do your work day by day and week by week, I have great faith in the residents to take a look at your candidacy, the fact that you want to earn the right to represent them for another 2 years. The interesting thing about politics is, though, that those of us who have challenged the mayor know that obviously he will have his people trying to get us out and get other people in. So there is a political science aspect to our service. And I understand that. You know what? That's the nature of government at the federal level and the state level, and it's the nature of government at the city level. But I believe in Brockton, and I believe the residents and the voters will do the right thing if you have earned their trust and you have worked hard for them.
Okay, we're speaking with at-large Councillor Wynn Farwell, Ward 5 Councillor Ann Borgard, and Ward 6 Councillor Jack Lally. Anything that we haven't brought up? We got a couple of minutes left here. Anything we haven't had a chance to...
Yes. and let
Jack, did you want to chime in, Jack?
Just a minute. Could I throw out a an update for the sports complex?
You have 60 seconds. Go.
Excellent. The sports complex did receive at least one bid. Again, it is going to be the west of the baseball fields at the Brookfield Elementary School all the way to Howard Street. The people who secured the bid are currently investigating. You know, they're taking walkthroughs, examining the land, making sure everything's up to par so that they would be interested in buying it. You know, they're looking right now to make sure the land is what was advertised and that they're interested in completing the deal.
All right. And when are you expecting your next update or more information?
I do not know when they're going to wrap that up, but after that, you know, assuming they're still interested in buying the property, which I believe they will be, then we have meetings with the residents in the neighborhoods around it, bring them up to speed, make sure they want it. If they don't want it, I can't in good conscience go forward with it. So they, you know, they'll be given all the information. They'll be shown what the project is going to look like, given some background information, given the opportunity to answer questions. It really is about making sure that it's something they're willing to live with.
Okay. Very good. Well, we look forward to more updates as they become available. Now,
quick update on the Council on Aging.
Please do, yes.
There are many of us on the council who would like to see them move from their current location down on
Father Kenny Way,
up to the Shaw's Center. It would be an expanded facility, more programs, more services for the elderly.
Free baseball games?
Well, whatever we can do for them, ample parking. And the council has passed a resolve that if they want to move there, we would help them in any way they could. They do want to move there, so the next step, I hope, is to get the mayor engaged. And, you know, it's an election year. I can't think of anything better than in October. Cut the ribbon for a new expanded senior center, and everyone's going to be happy. So we're definitely going to be pushing that as hard as we can.
So there'll be two Council on Agings, or will there just be the one?
Just be the one, and I actually think we might even have a tenant for the current Council on Aging building that would raise some revenue for the city.
So. See, that was my next question.
Is that a city building?
What becomes of the... No, it definitely is. What becomes of the old building? But you found somebody who might be interested in occupying that, and that's a very good thing.
Yes.
Definitely
is.
I
think so.
Anything else we want to say in closing before we let Mr. Rashto tell us a little bit about Raisin in the Sun?
Well, I'm just going to remind people that they've received their census. Please fill it out. The more people fill it out, the more revenue we can look forward to in our community, considering that things funds are tight at the state level, and that we're available. And we're out here informing people, and you're always welcome at these subcommittee meetings. The information's on the city's website. We always make the announcements for them. And to come to these, you know, various commissions and boards. And tomorrow evening, actually, we have the mayor coming in front of us to talk about empty slots on any of these boards and commissions, and letting the citizens know about finding out about serving on them.
Any early indication if there's anything, any openings? Because I know in a lot of other communities, that's kind of a tough thing to get people to volunteer to sit on various boards and committees. And I know it's an ongoing thing around the South Shore, so I wouldn't be surprised if there are still a couple pending in Brockton.
Yeah, I'm sure there are, but maybe we can advertise on our city website, and if people are interested, let the mayor know, and he can screen them, that they're his appointments.
Do a public service announcement on WATD.
Public service announcement, yeah. And, you know, just before we turn it over to our other colleague here.
Mr. Rashto.
Yes.
Politics of Arts.
I hope people will take the time to watch the meetings on local cable, you know, it is an election year, and you know what? Whether someone votes for us or not, pick the people that you think will do the best job for you. I really think it's important to watch what goes on in city government. We're the lowest common denominator when it comes to things that affect you on your everyday life, more so than the Congress or the state legislature. So,
yeah,
take a peek at us and then make your own judgment.
Jack, you want to say something in closing?
I just want to echo what Councillors Farwell and Beauregard have said. You know, just stay informed. You know, if you have any questions or a concern about anything, you know, please don't hesitate to reach out. You know, call us, email us. It's what we're here for. It's what we're here to do. Yeah, it is, as Councillor Farwell said, this is where you can have local elections or where you can have the biggest impact, yet the smallest amount of people participate. So get out there and, you know, vote.
All right. And we're going to let you go, Councillor, but we thank you for participating and being a part of the conversation this evening.
Thank you for having me.
You got it. There he is, Ward 6 Councillor Jack Lally joining us. And please don't leave. You can join in the conversation as we interrogate this gentleman about this show, A Raisin in the Sun. What is this all about?
Raisin in the Sun by Lorraine Hainsbury, Pulitzer Prize winner. This play is about a family struggling in the south side of Chicago in, I want to say, the late 50s, early 60s. Okay. The family is headed up by a senior matriarch, Lena Younger, and her son, Walter Lee, lives with her, along with his wife, Ruth, and their son, Travis, and Lena's daughter, Benita. And they're actually waiting for the father had recently passed away. They're waiting for the life insurance check. And there are two schools of thought in what to do with a life insurance check. Walt Lee is a struggling chauffeur, struggling to provide for his family. He wants to purchase a liquor store and sees that as a way to better provide for his family. And the mother, his mother, Lena, also known as Mama in the play, she wants to purchase a home for the family in a more affluent community, and she sees that as being the bedrock for the cornerstone for the family's progress, and hence the conflict there ensues. We're Massillon Theater Company is producing this for one weekend. On March 9th, this Thursday, we open, and we run through Saturday with a matinee on Saturday at 3 p.m. All the other shows are 8 p.m. And the 3 p.m. matinee and the 8 p.m. show on Saturday, we'll have a talk back afterwards between the audience and the cast.
Very nice. Tickets, $16 for general public. If you're a student or senior, $14. Call the box office, 508-427-1234.
Or head on over to the website, massasoit.edu/boxoffice, and buy them online.
And in case you get confused, it is the Brockton campus, the Buckley Performing Arts Center. Right off of where the old Christos used to be.
I hate to say that.
The old Christos used to be. It's now called the parking lot across from the conference center.
Yes, right next to the conference center. But this play is, as I said, a Pulitzer Prize winner. Great time to get out there, support the community on the as far as the arts go, and great conversation afterwards.
I want to thank everybody who was here this evening. Great conversation. Thank you for having us. And I want to thank Larry behind the glass.
Thank you.
Thank you, Larry.
Doing great a great job as always. And that's all the Monday Night Talk that we have until next week at 6:15 p.m. Have yourself a great evening.